Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Knocking your teeth loose with the best hockey coverage possible. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard, Billy Jaffe, and some guy over there.
Oh, hey, Ozzy.
Mark Osborne in the studio. Is this your Hockey Central debut?
It is. Up from the East Coast League. Got the call up early this morning.
Short shifts.
I'm from the Southern Pro League. So Millard is stuck. Guys, actually, we lose per diem going to McDonald's.
If I'm Brett Hull right now, I'm like, look who I'm playing with tonight. Yeah. Well, no, I love hanging out with you guys. You guys are awesome.
I kind of knew that, but I thought I'd get at least a few props knowing when we did play pickup hockey that I was back there doing a good job defensively for you.
You would yell at me. Let's in the spirit of full disclosure, you would yell at me.
Oh,
can you blame him?
You weren't very nice to me.
You know what?
Like during the game,
outside
of the game.
You were always upset that Gartz was going high and hard on you, and that's part of your job. Just save him. That's all you have to do.
Mike Gardner, Hockey Hall of Famer. So we'd play these games in the NTR, and it's like, what, two-thirds the size of a regular rink? Mm-hmm. So it's small. It's 3-on-3. And Gartner's on one team. Ozzie and Chris King are on the other team. And every time that Gartz team would like lose 3 or 4, it'd always be that, because they'd switch sides, it'd always be he'd be going against me. And he would just let loose. He was going to win a game by himself. And it's like, off your head, off your shoulder, off your head, and in.
Good. I'd love to see it.
Hey, you know what? You were so good, though, that you got the call for one Leaf alumni game, if you remember.
Yes.
You know,
that's when Marcel Dion ran me.
Yes.
Goalie interference?
No, I was in the corner.
And that's Joe Bowen's claim to fame that he stopped Marcel Dion on a breakaway. You and Joe Bowen, what a pair.
Bowen seems good that night, too.
Memories.
Yeah, what a... That was one of the... Oh, yeah, who was the coach? Who coached us in that game? Johnny Bauer coached us in that game. That was cool. And then I had to give my sweater back after. Like, I'm finally going to have a real Leaf sweater.
You're like a little
tight
kid.
Budget. They came and they you should know came, it's a tight budget.
They came and took it back
crying.
From me. Guy Boucher, he's going to coach Canada at the Spengler Cup, is coming up in just a little bit. We'll chat with him and what his aspirations are and where he sees his future after his stint and tenure with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But we'll do a bit of a roundup here from the weekend, and you're starting to see some bit of separation in the National Hockey League, and teams start to establish some dominance, at least in the Pacific Division, where you have a gap between first and second, and again in the Atlantic between the playoff teams. But for the Toronto Maple Leafs, it was a really disappointing weekend when you lose not only to Pittsburgh, but how they lost to the Buffalo Sabres. And Ozzy, you do the pre and post game show, the intermissions on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Leafs Network. Tell me how that happens. A lot of people are having trouble digesting getting thumped by the Buffalo Sabres.
Well, you know what? I think the way that it did occur is that this is a mental aspect of the game, I think, for the Maple Leafs. And the lack thereof, I think, of consistency that we've seen in this group for many, many seasons. And when you put forward and respond to good efforts after you did not do well against Boston and against Pittsburgh earlier, and then you come back and, you know, the effort on Friday night, I think, was there. They were widely outplayed, I think, 5-on-5. And yet, when you go against a team like Buffalo, that's the worst team. Like, we could say they're the worst team in the National Hockey League. I think they thought it was going to be easy. And then you get the Michael Neuvirth effect, Billy, where he stood on his head really and made a number of good saves. And then they get a bit of momentum when Tyler Ennis scores on the power play. And then they get a shorthanded goal. And then you actually believe that you can compete because of the fact you look back in time and they're 13-1-1 at home against the Maple Leafs. Although that was the Ryan Miller effect back then, but yet it's all about how well you do feel against an opposition.
Out of the, we'll call it 19,000 people at the arena in Buffalo, 14,000 were Leafs fans. They were loud. They tried to be, and they had nothing to cheer about really in that game. Neuvirth was excellent in the first period. He might make 3 or 4, I would call legit say, I'm talking really good saves. The first goal wasn't scored till late in the first. So, I mean, it was one of those, if They get the first goal. The Leafs probably control that game. But like what Teddy Nolan said afterwards, they talked about it being Saturday night hockey, hockey night in Canada. The players knew it. And, you know, not being disrespectful, Buffalo's got to beat somebody sooner or later. I mean, a decent team I'm talking about, not just another really bad team. They're going to. The statistics or the odds say that they are going to. You don't want to be that team that gets beat by them. But I agree with you. I thought the Leafs took it nonchalantly. I thought after that second goal where Reimer went Superman going forward instead of going lateral or getting horizontal and getting wide and or like, maybe not even making that play.
Yeah. Like Dubnyk did last night.
Well, Dubnyk went, yes, he made himself even bigger than his 6 foot five, 6 foot six in frame, and he read it better and he got there quicker. I thought the tenor of the game changed from that moment on.
Yeah, you know what? And then early in the second period, Buffalo goes up 3-0. Rimes is looking a bit shaky, and I thought maybe Randy was going to make a goaltending change. And then the last, two or three minutes of that second period where the Leafs got back in the hockey game. They in fact, Komarov with about 2 seconds left. It could have been 3-2 going into the third period. And yet, it's something typically that we've seen out of the Maple Leafs, Darren. I mean, you've watched this team.
So is it leadership?
I think so. I believe it's leadership without a doubt. And that's one of the things that, I could be vocal.
Coaching or players?
I think it's players. Okay. I think it comes down to players. You know, the core group of guys, and I know we're probably going to talk about some of that stuff that occurred, the lack thereof of what's been reported already of Phil not speaking to the media after. And you hear Dion's comments, they're very robotic. You know, we want more. And I think we deserve more other than the same old stuff. Like, I can listen to Dion Phaneuf at the start of the year, and I can turn down the volume because what he says at the end of the year is the same thing he said at the start of the year.
I lived in New York area for a while, and obviously Derek Jeter, there for forever. He was kind of robotic in his answers, but they won.
Yeah. He competed, and he played with some passion.
Right. And I'm not comparing Jeter to Phaneuf. What I'm saying is later in his career, and we won't get into whether he played too long or not. Point is, he was always kind of monotone, robotic, didn't give you much at all in his comments as a player, but he won. They won as a team. There's a big difference. Like you said, they need more in that Toronto market because the Leafs haven't. And they haven't been able to prove that.
Hall of Fame induction night. We'll touch on Modano, Hasek, Forsberg, Blake, McCurry, and Burns in a little bit. Darren Millard along with Billy Jaffe and Mark Osborne here at Hockey Central at noon. The comment made by Phil when a reporter asked for a chat was get away from me.
Mm-hmm.
Should he be called out for that?
I think he was. And I think that's what we're talking about today. Is I did not know that, having talked on the fan yesterday, that Phil posed it that way. I was asked the question, did you have a problem that Phil did not address the media after the game? And I think you don't have to all the time. I think maybe that's part of what superstar...
You get absolutely nothing out of him. You guys played some of his stuff the other night when I was driving home, and I heard it. And it's almost laughable what he gives you at times, but
what's the context? Do we know the context of this situation, Darren? I mean, I didn't. I was working another game. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest, I didn't hear. Was it after the other media was there? Somebody come back up? Did somebody?
Well, he was walking through the room, and based with the way I understand it, do you have a second?
Yeah,
can't talk to you.
I would. I mean, if I say if because I wasn't there and I didn't hear it with my own ears, so I've learned not to believe everything on the internet is truth. But what
I saying that in any context.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Instead of saying get away, if he said get away from me, it should have just been sorry, I'm done with the media. No,
exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we say we want these guys to be emotional and passionate, but yet sometimes that comes out in the wrong way, and yet they shouldn't. I mean, it's called manners. When it's all said and done.
You know what? Let's face it, Darren. We want more out of a guy like Phil Kessel when it comes down to even addressing the media, being the superstar that he is here in this city. And we then get to the point where we're accepting him. We're accepting him because that's just not in him. It's not in his personality. It's not in his nature. Has he tried? I look at maybe coming back after training camp, that there were moments where he tried to at least be lighthearted, and that is as far as he can go. I know you're in Boston now. You're probably not there when he was a Boston Bruin in the early days.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet what he does on the ice, I think we can be accepting. But yes, a superstar, whether it was Matt Sundin, Dougie Gilmore, Wendell Clark, the list goes on. We got more out of those guys. We're just not going to get it out of Phil Kessel, no matter how hard you try.
So how do you address Toronto's inconsistency, where they're so good for three or four games and then shut down?
They're so like a lot of the league, though. I mean, yeah. They get scrutinized more because it's Toronto, but there's a lot of the league right now that is so good for three or four games and then is so kind of what the heck just happened for the next two games there. I mean, you saw it with the Boston Bruins. Now, were they so good in winning those five in a row? They were better. They weren't great. They would tell you they didn't dominate for the most part. They were, but then they go and they have that quick Canadian swing where they got spanked by Toronto and Montreal, and you're like, what the heck just happened there? I think it's kind of the nature of this league. I think that we see the parody and we see the perils and the parody, I guess, of this league. But with regard to Toronto, Derek, we talked a few weeks ago on the show about the team too. They're still in that identity transition. They're still trying to figure out. Unfortunately, the fans don't want to hear that, but they don't. I mean, you know, they want to hear we are what we are. Yeah. We're going to get better. I don't think they still have. I know they still don't have the kind of pieces they need or want here.
Yeah, you know what? I think I agree with Billy here, Darren, is that especially when you look at the Eastern Conference and, you know, you go from the Ottawas, the Toronto, New Jersey, Rangers, Florida, Washington. Everybody is the same, you know. They're all hovering around 500. You go on a bit of a streak. Or remember a number of weeks ago how we were all throwing the Carolinas under the bus, and then lo and behold, they win four, and now they've lost three. So it's win a few, lose a few, and that's
what's the common denominator, Ozzy? Goaltending.
Yeah,
goaltending. When the teams finally get it. It does cover up. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much easier. Here's your obvious comment of this hour. Good goaltending makes it a lot easier to win.
There was a play in the Leaf game against Buffalo that bothered me. It wasn't as much Reimer going out and losing control of the puck. But did you see Dion stand at the side of the net?
Yeah.
It's an empty net. And it sounds like you're picking on Dion again. But
well, there was a play later in the game.
Don't you have to get in front of the net instead of standing beside the post?
Well, you have to make it look as though you are making an effort in some ways. And I think this is the frustration point that I think happens for a polarizing guy like Dion Phaneuf, is that you wish that he showed some emotion or at least an effort at times as opposed to just standing still.
Get right back to that. Breaking news. Let's go to the Sportsnet 590 update desk.
All right, Darren, normally we wouldn't talk baseball on your show, but this one's important. The Blue Jays have reportedly agreed to a deal with catcher Russell Martin, the Canadian, a five-year contract. Now, that report from John Heyman of CBS Sports, Peter Gammons of ESPN saying it's worth McCann money, and you may remember that Brian McCann signed a five-year, $85 million deal with the Yankees last offseason. So Russell Martin reportedly on his way to Toronto. Darren?
Thank you, Andrew Nye from Sportsnet 590. Update desk. So good news for the Toronto Blue Jays as the Toronto Maple Leafs endure a couple of losses on the weekend. So Montreal, we thought they were the best Canadian team coming into the year.
Yeah.
Are you starting to see that morph into a more of a form that we thought we'd see instead of getting a shot or blowing leads or coming back?
I still look at them as a bit of a, well, the last few games, you know, last night against Detroit, they were pretty methodical in that approach. I was impressed with their business-like, workman-like attitude, especially coming off the back-to-back and, you know, the good game on Saturday against Philadelphia. I'm seeing that confidence in this team that I saw develop last year in the playoffs. And now you're just seeing a bit of a good swagger. And whenever I see a team with at least what I perceive as swagger, I feel better about them because there's that thing called it. And when you feel like you have it, it makes you play better.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of elements to their game that you do like. And yeah, you mentioned the experience last year. That is something that you do build on. And, of course, goaltending, you mentioned that. When you got a guy like Carey Price in the net, P.K. Subban, I mean, there's just a lot of factors. And even as you bring in a guy like Sergei Gonchar, you know, on the back end for a bit of depth, and how ironic that in their win I think it was against the Flyers on Saturday. The Habs scored three power play goals, and Gonchar was not a part of any of those. He had two assists on 5-on-5.
Right, but he allows, by being there, he allows the set to be better what they want. And instead of having the other units they had, now they have two lefties and two righties on their power play units, which is what Coach Michel Therrien wanted all along, and now he feels like he has it. So he doesn't get power play points on that game. But yes, the team gets better sets, better looks on their power play on that Saturday night.
When do the Montreal Canadiens go from being the best Canadian team to Stanley Cup contender?
When?
Yeah. Or are they now?
Well, you know what? Representing the East, if you look at the East right now, I mean, I know we're going to talk about Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay. Those would be the other teams in the mix. I don't know, Billy, about Boston, whether they can, you know, do it again. It seems like they're taking a bit of a step back, you know, having
transitional
lost,
period right now. Yeah, no question with their injuries and their changes and some players in the lineup right now, the transition. But yes, Montreal, Tampa, Pittsburgh are the teams that you would say are the best in the East.
So as far as Montreal representing the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup, I'd say yes. At this point, I have no reason to believe that they could not be that team.
Listen, they've gotten themselves situated up front, too, with a better third line. Prust is playing the way that they wanted Brandon Prust to when they signed him to that four-year, $10 million contract a couple of years back. Sikach is in there now. Yuri Sikach having a nice, you know, this is why Mark Bergevin, one of the reasons he made the move with the waiver of Rene Bork, because now you get Sikach playing more regularly. And the biggest guy maybe for them, the most important, is their big Danish centerman and Lars Eller. Point is, now they've got this structure, this depth, this balance that they'd been seeking. They felt that they didn't have. And because of that, they are one of the better teams, one of the best in the East now.
Guy Boucher was former coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He will handle Team Canada, the Spengler Cup this year. And he joins us now on Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard, along with Billy Jaffe and former NHLer Mark Osborne. Guy, what are you doing? Last year you coached in Bern. Are you coaching anybody full-time this year?
Sorry?
Are you coaching anywhere full-time this year?
Yeah, I'm in Bern now.
Okay. We were checking on HockeyDB, and it didn't show up at all, and we were trying to track you down. So Spengler Cup opportunity, where did that come from?
Well, that's something I definitely wanted to do, and had some talks with the guys that are in charge of Hockey Canada, and it was a good fit. I mean, I've been with Hockey Canada five times before, the under 18, under 20 in the worlds, and something I've always enjoyed. It's always a thrill and an honor to represent my country, and this great opportunity to do something else I haven't done with Hockey Canada yet. Spengler is right here in Switzerland in Davos, and it's a terrific tournament where all the top Canadians that play in the different leagues in Europe are called upon to wear the jersey and play. This year we're going to play against three KHL teams, and there's two Swiss teams, so it's a great tournament.
Guy, how much has coaching so far, a little bit last year and obviously this season, in the Swiss League or in Europe in general, impacted your coaching philosophies?
Well, you know what? Everywhere I've been, in every league, every year, whether it was in midget, junior, American League, NHL, or here, and my Hockey Canada experiences, you pick up so much everywhere, from people, from players, from other coaches, from opponents. And this is no different down here. Actually, I love it because I see things I've never seen before. Not just systems, but just sometimes the way people do things and little ideas. It just sometimes confirms things that you like to do before. And sometimes just changes your mind on things or tweak things. And it's been a terrific experience because there's really good players. The caliber of play here would be between the American League and the NHL. So it's very high. Ex-NHLers and guys who play for their national teams. And so you can do a lot with these players. The speed is tremendous, and we get the chance also to go play in tournaments against KHL teams or teams from Finland and Sweden. So the experience is very vast, and it really brings you a lot because not only you meet people, but you meet people from different places in the world. So it's been quite a treat for me.
Guy, when you look back in your coaching career thus far, you were in the Quebec League, you coached university hockey, on in the Montreal system with the Bulldogs, and then Tampa Bay. Have you altered, adjusted? Well, what did you learn, I guess, coming away from, you know, being let go by Tampa Bay? And now, I think, are you trying to revitalize the way that you approach the game? Because I know I've known a lot about you in the way that you're so passionate of the game. But now going over to Europe, are you changing?
You know what? I think the main thing you want to watch out not to change too many things. I mean, you as a player, as a coach, if you've had success for a long time in every league, I mean, you don't want to change the core of what you're doing, the core philosophy. I think what's important is the peripheral things. I believe is what's got to be my focus on changing things. Where the core philosophy, things I really believe in that have worked pretty much everywhere in every league, I certainly don't want to change that. But I'm very open to bring in new stuff or take the stuff that I was doing before, but just tweak it or explain it in different ways. I know, like this year already, within a few months, just the same thing explained in a different way. You realize, oh my goodness, what a change that makes in the learning curve sometimes, and it makes it more simple. Good friends with Jacques Lemaire, and that's one thing I've learned over the years. He's the best I've ever seen at making explaining something complex and making it simple. And I think as you grow older, very often, instead of adding things, you just make things more simple and trim things down rather than add stuff. And I think that's probably the maturity thing. I came in the NHL at 38, so that's quite young for an NHL coach. So I know there's years to come where I keep growing. But the thing I realize is as you move along, as you make things simpler, really guys understand faster, and your learning curve is really something that's positive. I think right now I realize that here even more, because it's a different culture. It's a different way of seeing things. They're used to a man-to-man defense, which almost nobody does now in North America, and there's a reason for it. But it makes you look at everything in a new way. And I think the way that you explain things sometimes is the most important thing, rather than changing things. So I'd say that's probably the biggest thing for me is how to re-explain some things that have worked before, but in a different way.
Chatting with Guy Boucher, Team Canada's coach for the Spengler Cup, also working in Bern right now. So is there one thing you would have done differently when you were with the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Oh, my God. Every year, even when I've won a championship, I mean, after the year, you sit back and you go, okay, we could have done this better, we could have done that better, and I mean, every year Tampa was different.
Give me an example of something maybe with the Lightning.
Well, the first year we had certain types of players, and the second year we lost seven of those players, whether because of contract or age. And, doing the same thing didn't necessarily, not in terms of systems, but just the approach with some players. I mean, we had some players that year that had a lot more pressure because some leaders were gone. So I could have managed that a bit better by relieving some pressure on some of the guys that were there. We tried some guys in the American League that year and had some junior guys brought in. And looking back, it was too many at the same time and too quick. And I could have managed that a little better too. Our goaltender was 42 years old, and I look back and there's some, I might have managed it differently now. So, there's many, many things you look back, and obviously it's sometimes it's second guessing, but things that you did the first year that worked, and all of a sudden, because the circumstances are different, should have managed it differently here and there, the way you approach some meetings. There's many, many things, but I mean, it usually doesn't come down to your systems. It doesn't come down to your X's and O's. It usually comes down to people and managing. I mean, we it was tough also. We had a terrific run with Wayne Fleming, and he was such a good person and such a good coach. In the second year, he was battling his tumor, and that was tough to manage. And we look back and we missed him a lot, and then he was somebody that we missed and that was helpful on our staff. And looking back, that also was tough to handle for us and for the players, and we missed him. Yeah.
How much did the success, say, of a guy like Bob Hartley going to coach over in Europe, in Switzerland, coming back to the NHL, impact your decision, Guy, to go over there if at all?
Well, you know, last year I knew there was some jobs that might be open by the end of the year. But come January, I mean, you have to make a decision at some point. And Bern had been after me since November, and I'd refused before. And in the end, there's many reasons why I accepted the job in Bern. One of them is my family. You know, my wife is one of her dreams. She'd been following me for 18 years, and she paid the price for over the years with three kids and not a lot of help around her, and it was sometimes difficult. So her dream was to come to Europe, because her family's from Holland. Her sister lives in Switzerland, an hour away from our home now, and she wanted the kids to live a bit of what her life was when she was younger in Europe. And so that's part of it. But also the fact that Bern is basically Montreal Canadiens of Europe. It's the biggest organization. It has packed house every night between 16,000 and 17,000 people. And it's got lots of pressure. So, you know, in that sense, that's not a big dropout from you know, the pressure we get back home, whether it's the American League or the NHL. And so I really felt that it was a great hockey opportunity, great family opportunity. And yes, you know, looking at Bob Hartley coming over and coming back to the NHL after, and now Mark Crawford, who also came over, his name comes up all the time also. I think it's such a good lead that you just continue growing just as much as if you were in the American League. And it gives you the opportunity to continue improving as a coach. And that's how I saw it. So for me, I saw it as a win-win situation where it's good for the family. Only 50 days, we're home every night. We never have to sleep on the road. And so I see my kids a lot more than I did before. And I still get to coach at a high level and improve and learn. And now I get the opportunity to be with Hockey Canada once again. So, you know, it was a win-win situation all around. But, yes, I do want to go back to the NHL at some point. But I refused two offers this summer because I was committed here. And they were great offers by great organization and great culture. So they would have been great opportunities, but I had committed, so it was important for me to keep my commitment.
The Tampa Bay sits at 12-4-2 and right up near the top of the Eastern Conference standings. Is there anyone in particular on that roster right now that you coach that you're looking at and saying, I knew it, he was going to turn into be that type of player, and he's having a tremendous season? Anyone jump out at you?
The funny thing is, I think there's about three guys left on that team that I've coached. So, I mean, it's a completely new team. Obviously, Stamkos and Hedman I coached before, but pretty much everybody else, I coached the last few months, a few other guys. But if you look at the first years I was there, there's basically almost nobody left except those guys. I mean, after I got fired the year after, Bishop came about 4 days after I was fired, and a few other guys after, but during the summer, there was a turnaround of about 10 players already. So the year after, half the team was new, and now they continue to, with the plan that I kind of knew about when I was back there. The plan was to all those terrific young guys from the American League who won that championship, we knew that they were slowly coming up. Like, it was just a matter of time. The Palats and the Johnsons and Killorns, all these guys, and the guys that were drafted, like the Cherov, and like, we knew they were terrific players coming. We just didn't know how long it would take before they'd be coming up. But it was just a matter of time. So, I mean, they're doing a terrific job. They're following the plan that we had back then, basically. So, Al Murray's a terrific scout, and Steve with Julian do an unbelievable job down there at Panther Beach. So I'm not surprised at least that how good things are going there. They're great people, great players, people, the owners, terrific also. So when you got terrific people that are committed, it's just a matter of time before you have that much success. So I'm not surprised at all.
Before we let you go, who are some names that we might recognize playing for Bern right now, playing for you?
Well, Marc-Andre Grignani, who was in Buffalo, he's playing for us. Byron Ritchie, who played for Florida and then Calgary. Chuck Kobusu, who was in the NHL the last year as a first-round pick. So those are a few of the guys that Bud Hall, we also was in the American League a few years ago, left the American League from was a top scorer in MVP and left, I think, at 22 to come to Europe to play in Sweden. He was a top scorer in Sweden in the last few years. And he's with us. But, yeah, the rest are guys from national teams here, from other teams, from other countries. So, yeah, it's really good players, high caliber. So I'm really pleased that there's a lot of things we can do with those guys.
Hey, a lot of advertising on the sweaters in Europe. And there's some talk about it in the National Hockey League. Would you be open to that, or is that something that you're strictly against? You're living it right now.
Yeah, I'm living it, but I'll be honest with you. Like, when I scout teams, we're watching the teams, I always have to ask my assistant, who's that team? And then who's that team? Because they all look the same. Just a bunch of patches. One team's blue.
Have they started advertising on the coaches' suits yet?
Well, I actually, during games on my shirt, I got a sponsor name on my shirt, so I got to match that with my ties now, so I'm already colorblind, so my wife's going nuts.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
We got to get a picture of that.
We do. Really appreciate it, and good luck both with Bern and the Spengler Cup with Team Canada.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
There's Guy Boucher. Do you know that the sponsors' logos were on the coaches?
I didn't. That's why there's a legit question, because I figured sooner or later, you know, they have players wearing the leading scorer in certain leagues wears a special color helmet. And then you've got ads on everything from your jerseys to your socks to the tape that you use and everything. It's unbelievable, colorful, but crazy.
But it is going to happen. It's happening in the American Hockey League, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's revenue, Billy.
It won't happen until the NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball do.
Well, in theory, and I'm stretching a little here, in theory it already happens with the jersey makers and the helmet makers and the gloves. It's already happening, normal.
What you could sell that sponsorship for on a National Hockey League sweater, and that jersey manufacturer is right. There's so much value out of that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable what exposure they get.
So, happens
you just
there?
You take it for
but even,
granted,
but let's say
there.
You know you have a jersey maker, but then you're putting another thing on the jersey. Mm-hmm. Does the jersey maker only get his or her, you know, their money, and then you can put anything else next to that name? No problem without ticking them off.
Yeah, you're right.
You work it out together. It's called partnership.
It's called making money.
You see how it's working with MLSE? They're getting along well, right?
Took over Christmas. They did. They took over Christmas. They ran the Santa Claus parade yesterday in Toronto.
Never too early.
Maybe it was only a matter of time before they took over Christmas. But thanks to everybody down there. It was actually a great day for the kids. Took our little young ones down and enjoyed it. Put them up in a tree to watch the parade. I don't think you're really supposed to do that, but
rebel.
Yeah.
You're a rebel.
Stepping on lights and all that kind of stuff. When we continue, the three stars, plus who is the best team in the National Hockey League? It's not as easy as in years past as we approach the 20-game mark. It's Hockey Central with Mark Osborne and Billy Jaffe, along with Darren Millard. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is Hall of Fame induction day. Darren Millard with Billy Jaffe and Mark Osborne. Modano, Hasek, Forsberg, Blake, players category, McCreary, and Burns, referee and coach going in. Michael Renberg will not be inducted into the Philadelphia Flyers Hall of Fame later on this week, but Eric Lindros and John LeClair will be. It's come full circle with Eric Lindros. I wasn't sure there'd ever come a day when he would be welcomed back, but I guess it was the outdoor game there. They had the alumni game, the Legends game, and now...
Great class, Eric Lindros. Great class.
Yeah.
I think great class.
He even skated with the Flyers last year when the Flyers visited the Air Canada Center, which was pretty interesting.
Did you skate in the Legends game?
I did.
This weekend?
Yesterday.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it skate.
No?
I tried to get up and down my wing. I had to play with Daryl Sittler.
Had to, eh?
And I felt like I kept up with him, so that was pretty good, right? 64 years old.
Red Berenson used to come out and skate with us and practice the same type of way. You're like, who is this guy? And you can't keep up, and you see him under the mask. It's Red. You're like, And what the hell's he doing that at 60 years old?
And I think because of Rick Vive's performance yesterday that his banner may go up because of the hat trick that he scored.
He, having been around a few of those games, not just the Legends game and Hall of Fame weekend, but Rick does like to score.
Oh.
He still likes to score.
Yeah. So does Kipper.
Kipper did get a goal.
He scored yesterday.
Two.
Did he get two?
That's what he reported.
Oh, wow.
Did you score?
I did not. I had to feed Gary Lehman because there's a couple of guys that wanted to score. Those two guys, Gary Lehman and Daryl Sittler, it meant something to them to score a goal yesterday. I'm telling you, right?
Hey, your buddy Bill Berg's been in the news a little bit because of Pat Burns going in. And he had the famous quote, and wouldn't know him if I ran him with a bus, something to that line. But what was it like playing for Pat Burns?
Well, it was fantastic. And you hear the other guys talk about it, especially Dougie Gilmore. And the fact is that he valued everybody on the team. And I was asked this last week, did you get some of those personal things with Pat that guys like Dougie had that relationship with? And, you know, why would you not have a relationship with your best player, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's art of coaching.
Some don't.
I know, some don't, but that's part of the coaching, the art of coaching. Make sure you get your best players on board with you. And yet, after we went to the 94 semifinals loss to Vancouver, and I did not re-sign that following summer, for whatever reason, Cliff decided that some of the young guys could do what we could only do as third-line checkers, right? Like, I mean, that's an art in itself, right, being a checker?
Mm-hmm.
But when he heard I did not sign, I signed with the Rangers with Neil Smith after they won the Cup in 94, Burnsy and Mike Murphy paid a visit to my house. And I thought that was really neat. And I could tell Pat just opened up a little bit, and you saw the personal side of this guy that you knew if you didn't have a good game that it was no pucks the next day, right? Which I wish the Leafs would have done on Sunday, but they have a mandatory day off.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? So that was the part that was really touching for me, that I played for a guy that I really enjoyed playing for. He valued his third line guys, and you were all given a role on that team, and that was a little bit of the special moments of playing in the National Hockey League for a guy like Pat.
What do you think his best strength was as a coach? Connecting with his players, or was it the tactical side?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. And he had great assistant coaches with Mike Kitchen and Mike Murphy.
You don't hear a lot about his tactical strengths.
It's a different game.
People want to talk about the stare or
his
personality.
But you know, interesting enough that at the start of, in the early 90s, the trap started to come to be a part of things. And it was really under Pat that we learned how to play the trap. So whether it was Mike and, you know, Murph and Kitch that were, you know, main aspects of that structure, or Burnsy bought in, or was a collective thing between the three of them.
How important was it for you to have a good relationship with your coach? You always talk about coaches needing to know their players.
Mm-hmm.
Players don't always want to know their coaches that well. So did it matter to you how well you knew him or other coaches for that matter?
Well, you know what? I think one of the things that everybody respected about Burnsy, or what Burnsy saw in a lot of players, is that just give me an effort, you know, and you will get rewarded by that. And that's what a lot of us, I think, prided ourselves on, is we're going to show up. Just give me a job to do. And I perform better with knowing what my role was. I knew what it was when I played with old Chuck and Lehman. Just get those guys the puck and go up and down your ring. When I got traded to Winnipeg playing for Johnny Paddock, I did not know what my role was. I felt like a fish out of water in Winnipeg, and I thought my career was coming to an end. And then when I got traded back to Toronto to play for Pat and go into a structured system with, you know, Peter Zezel and Billy Berg, that was really vital for me to continue my career.
Darren Millard with Mark Osborne and Billy Jaffe here at Hockey Central at noon. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Simulcast on Sportsnet, the NHL Network in the United States. Hockey Hall of Fame Induction Day. Looking forward to the ceremony tonight. Three stars, not quite as big as the Hockey Hall of Fame, but still significant. The three stars from yesterday, and Millard, as I am apt to do, will go first. And Nick Bjugstad, because it might be the only time this year that I get to name Nick Bjugstad as a star.
I don't know.
6-2 win for the Florida Panthers, a career-high four-point game, and they go into Anaheim and drub the Ducks, in which not many people expected. Mm-hmm. One, to beat the Ducks in Anaheim, number two, score six goals, but Nick Bjugstad was off the charts. That whole line with Huberto was great, and boys.
I'm telling you, don't be surprised you name this kid another star again. Another.
You see me try and spell it.
I don't need to see you try and spell anything, especially on radio. But it's a he's a hell of a player.
You know what? He had 3 points going into the game last night, so he surpassed the entire season.
Yes, he did. But this kid, along with Barkov, will provide major size and strength down the middle for this team for their sake for years to come.
Does he have an angry bone in his body at all?
He's a mellow kid. It seems like. He's just there, but
he's got great skills. Yep, no question about it. His hands are beautiful and skates well.
We don't see as many angry players anymore. We don't.
just former players.
Just the media.
Get away from me.
What about you?
Troy Grosnick. I mean, the goaltender for the San Jose Sharks gets called up. 25 years old. What does he do? Playing against Carolina in Carolina. 45 saves. 45 saves.
This image of his dad crying in the stands.
Awesome. Awesome. I mean, the kid comes in, played a couple of years at Union College under Rick Bennett there, 3 years, and he goes in and he shines. He makes some beautiful saves. Carolina team that is struggling, they've lost their last few, only scored one goal, but 45 shots on him.
How about this? I get asked to do this morning and then says, you got to pick one of the stars. Well, I did. I picked these two right here. You guys take my star. Now I have to find the third star. And it's like going through my paperwork. Patrick Kane, 6-2 winners over the Dallas Stars. We're the Chicago Blackhawks, and is there anyone better with better hands in a National Hockey League? Again, 2 assists in the first period, game winner in the third. That was a good beating on.
They needed those goals.
Yeah, they did. They really did.
Just a win with some level of comfort.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Again, so who do you think is the best team in the National Hockey League as we sneak up on 20 games? Montreal Canadiens have the most points. They played a few more games than the likes of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Anaheim has only lost 4 times in regulation.
Right now the best team. I'm not saying they're going to win it. I'm saying the best team right now in the East Pittsburgh, and the best team in the West, I've got them as St. Louis. Mm-hmm. With St. Louis getting healthy, Stastny coming back, yep. Oshie coming back, the Laterra, line with Tarasenko and Schwartz, top line in the league right now. I've got them as my top Western team.
Yeah, you know what? The emergence of Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz, when you add that and they become just a little bit more experienced. Yeah. And it looks like Elliott can get it done, right?
Right now, for sure.
As far as the net. So all that they have learned playing against Chicago last year in the playoffs, I think, St. Louis is...
I like the team. And I know the term heavy is always used to describe them. But they also have... They got some pretty damn good skill there. I mean, Jori Lehterä and Tarasenko and Schwartz and when Stastny, I know he's back, but he really gets into the groove, guys. I mean, they got some hell of good skill on that team.
Oh, Winnipeg having trouble in their own division, but did pick up a point against Minnesota yesterday, but lost to Nashville 2-1. And Nashville's a team, along with Calgary right now, that I'm wondering if they can keep it going.
Well, that's what the talk of the town is.
You're waiting for it to unravel, right?
Yeah.
Peter LaViolette, and we talked about a couple of weeks on this show, wherever he goes the first year, is spectacular or gets spectacular results. And these are a lot of excitable hockey players right now in Nashville. The Philip Forsbergs, he's putting up points. But in the Colin Wilsons, he's all of a sudden it's like they're free. They can make a mistake and still end up playing. Question is, can the Riberos, the Roys, the Jokinens, can their forwards keep it up? They got great defense there and a great goaltender.
Yeah, you know what? It's refreshing, I think, for all of those players to be able to go from a system that was so, kitty bar the door, and now there's a little bit of life, and kudos to LaViolette. He's been able to do that in a number of organizations where he gets a lot in a short period of time, right? So
they're here tomorrow.
It's sort of like you joining this program as opposed to working with Stelic. Mm-hmm. You're freed up a little bit.
Yeah, I feel it. It's been fun to be with you guys. And I'm still trying to teach Gord. It seems like you guys have a lot that you guys know already. So,
as a broadcaster or just as a hockey commentator?
You answer that one.
Well, I found out Guy Boucher's in Bern.
In Bern.
He can answer long questions.
Show prep right there.
Were we not talking about where he was?
It wasn't on the list, but yes, for us.
He's in Bern.
Good for him.
Congratulations to all of tonight's recipients inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, media, players, coaches, as well as officials. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Billy Jaffe and Mark Osborne. It's been fun. The regular cast and characters back tomorrow on Hockey Central at noon.